Do we anticipate anybody joining us on the phone? Do we need to wait another minute, or do you think we can?
Not that I know.
I believe there probably are client representatives that may be calling in, but we certainly wouldn't ask for any delay of proceeding.
Well, at this point, there isn't any delay, but it looks like we've got everybody together that we need, so why don't we go ahead and get started? Go back on the record. It is January 31st, 2017, at approximately 9 a.m. We are here in the matter of the application of Powder River Energy Corporation for authority to increase its cost of power adjustment by $18,393,590 per annum, reflect a change in average wholesale power costs. That is docket number 10,014-172-CP-16. My name is John Burbridge, and as we discussed earlier, I've been duly appointed by the commission to act as a presiding officer in this matter. By way of introductions, to my right is Dave Walker, staff analyst. His right is Katie Koski, Public Service Commission staff attorney. And to her right is Morgan Fish, Public Service Commission staff analyst. More importantly, to my left is Commissioner Brighton. To her left is Chairman Manier. And then to round out, who's at the bench here, is Deputy Chairman Russell. I see that in the room we have Mr. Petrie, Wyoming Public Service Chief Counsel. Ms. Good, if you could make introductions on behalf of Powder River.
Thank you, Mr. Burbridge. Chairman Manier, Deputy Chairman Russell, and Commissioner Brighton, Mandy Good with Hearst Applegate here on behalf of Powder River Energy Corporation, or Precor. To my left is Precor CEO Mike Easling. To his left is Kara Ellsbury, also with Hearst Applegate. To her left is Tom Nicholas with Hearst Applegate. We also have with us in the room today Jim Tarpey with Ireland Stapleton, who's here with Precor. We have Precor's Chief Financial Officer, Joanne Cole. And as additional witnesses, we have David Hedrick, who's here with Guernsey. And we have two Basin officers, Mark Foss and Susan Sorensen, with us as well. We also have two members of Precor's Board of Directors, Jerry Geis, and the newest member of the Board of Directors, Bob, you'll have to help me with your last name.
Vergnani.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Good. Mr. Hickey.
Good morning again, Mr. Burbridge, Chairman Manier, Deputy Chairman Russell, Commissioner Brighton, members of staff, Council, Paul Hickey of Hickey and Evans, representing the three joint interveners in this case. With me are co-counsel Ray Gifford and Phil Roselli from the Wilkinson Barker firm in Denver. We also have our one witness, Kevin Higgins. Kevin is right behind me and well known to this commission. We don't have nearly the number of lawyers nor the number of representatives, but we do think we have an interesting case to present to you over the course of today and tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Just a quick preliminary matter or two. First of all, for those folks that are listening in by telephone, if you would be so kind as to keep your phones on mute so that we do not hear background noise, unless you need to or have been asked to speak, that would be great. In addition, I believe we have one preliminary matter to take up from Precor regarding standing objection. Ms. Good.
We did have one request, Mr. Burbridge. We've talked to the joint interveners about it, and so that we don't slow down the flow of things during the hearing, we'd like to insert a standing objection on the DGC, on the components of Basin's rate, and an interpretation of the wholesale power agreement, because we believe it's irrelevant due to the preemption arguments that are fully briefed in the summary judgment briefing. And we don't want to slow anything down, so we thought it best, and the joint interveners have agreed to allow us, if it's okay with the commission, to have a standing objection on those issues.
All right, and the intervener's position on this request?
We're fine if they want to make that a standing objection.
All right. Do the commissioners have any questions regarding that?
No.
Then your objection is noted. Thank you very much. And just a last reminder that I have is, as we discussed at the pre-hearing conference, I'm not going to be on the lookout for confidential material. If we get into confidential areas, please put us on notice, and we will take the steps to remove people that are not covered by protective order and or people on the phone that are not protected as well to protect those portions of the proceedings. With that, is there any other preliminary matter that the parties may have?
Nothing further from pre-court.
All right. Ms. Good, does pre-court have an opening statement?
We do. Thank you, Mr. Burbridge.
Please proceed.
Chairman Lanier, Deputy Chairman Russell, and Commissioner Brighton, Commission staff, counsel. Pre-court intends to put on witnesses for the commission that we believe will convince the commission it should determine that the entire amount of pre-court's requested pass-on is prudent, and it's a commodity or commodity-related cost for several reasons. And one of the most important things that we will put on for the commission are two basin officers who are going to talk about how DGC is integrated into the basin system and basin as a whole, and how it's related to basin's production of electricity. We're also going to put on witnesses who will talk about the DGC profits and the economies of scale, and how those have impacted basin's members and therefore Precor's members year after year after year. Along those lines, our witnesses will talk about how it doesn't make sense to say that the DGC component of basin's rate is imprudent or not commodity related at this point in time, when it has been included year after year in the past. We'll have witnesses that will explain how untenable it actually is to separate out the DGC portion of basin's rate increase for many reasons. But one example is you have testimony that's been pre-filed where Mr. Higgins talks about it being 62% of the entire rate increase. You have pre-filed testimony from Mr. Hedrick that says the lower than anticipated member sales account for over 80% of the increase. Neither of those numbers is founded because the same methodology was used to reach both of them, and the methodology is flawed. And we'll have witnesses who can discuss that with the commission. In terms of the wholesale power agreement, the commission's aware that there's language in the wholesale power agreement regarding rates that says basin can pass on costs that are related to related facilities. And the language at issue is related facilities. We'll have witnesses who will discuss how DGC fits within that definition of related facilities. The commission is well aware it can take into consideration the financial harm to a utility if a pass-on is not allowed. While Precor fully understands the impact of the pass-on on its members, it will also discuss the impact of not allowing the pass-on on the utility, including failing all of the RUS ratios, likely defaulting on the basin contract, and additionally, it'll talk about how it could dispute the impact of DGC on basin's bottom line, but if it did that, it still has to pay the cost while it's disputing the impact of that. We'll have witnesses who will talk about, finally, what else is out there to look at if we look at this one piece of basin's rate. If we look at the DGC component, they'll talk about the other five drivers that are identified by basin for the mid-year rate increase. And those five drivers aren't the only reasons for the rate increase. So we'll have witnesses who can discuss all of the reasons for this rate increase and why those are just as important a components as the DGC component. What we will work to do and what we believe our witnesses will do is show the commission that DGC is integrated into basin in a way that makes it prudent and in a way that makes it a commodity or commodity-related cost increase when DGC impacts basin's bottom line. And basin looks at its bottom line to create wholesale rates for Precor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Good. Mr. Hickey.
Thank you, Mr. Burbidge. Mr. Roselli will be giving our opening remarks.
Very good. Mr. Roselli, please proceed.
Good morning, Chairman Lanier, Deputy Chair Russell, Commissioner Brighton, staff, council, representatives in the room. The joint intervenors case is pretty simple, and you already heard it in the argument on summary judgment last week. And it pertains really to the singular issue, and Ms. Good just talked about it as well. Do the DGC costs that are included in Basin's wholesale rate, are those DGC business losses a pass-through electric commodity cost that are properly chargeable to Precor's retail customers? Section 26, as you know, requires that those increased costs be both prudent and commodity or commodity-related to be passed on pursuant to the requirements of Section 26 of the Commission's rules. We submit that the DGC costs, excuse me, are neither prudent nor are they commodity-related. And Precor really doesn't dispute, at least not to a great degree, that the DGC costs are not utility costs. They really can't, because Basin itself calls out DGC as a non-electric subsidiary and refers to the DGC costs as the cost of a non-electric subsidiary. And DGC clearly and indisputably is not an electric subsidiary, is not providing wholesale or retail power to anybody. It's primarily a coal gasification company. Basically, Precor argues that the commission just can't consider this issue. It can't look under the hood, if you will, to see what's in that Basin wholesale rate. And that's really the case. And you really just heard it in the standing objection. The commission is powerless to look at what costs are actually in that Basin wholesale power rate. They just have to accept as truth that everything that's in that rate is legitimately related to the provision of wholesale power. So last week in the oral argument, the commission rejected the first prong, effectively, of Precorp's position, that federal preemption would preclude this commission from taking up these issues. As a fallback is a second prong of this same argument. Precorp contends that Section 26 itself doesn't allow the commission to conduct this inquiry, to look under the hood and investigate the nature of these costs. And again, you heard it in the standing objection. According to Precor, all you have to decide is whether their original wholesale power requirement with Basin, their all requirements contract, back in 1997, was that contract prudent? Joint interveners don't dispute that entering into the contract was prudent. We've never disputed that. But according to Precor, that's all you have to think about in determining whether these increased costs from DGC are prudent and commodity related. That's the only box you have to check. We believe Section 26 of your rules, the pass-on rules, requires something more, and something more logical, if you will, in light of the Commission's core responsibility to ratepayers, to retail ratepayers, to ensure that rates are just and reasonable. We believe that Section 26 means exactly what it says. Look at the cost increases. Are those cost increases prudent? Are they commodity related? And that is the core of the Commission's charge under Wyoming law. Protect captive ratepayers, ensure that rates are just and reasonable. That's what the Commission does. And the question of whether rates are just and reasonable must be decided on a case-by-case basis. That was the holding of your Wyoming Supreme Court in the McCullough case, which was a pass-on application case. It cannot be, as Precorp suggests, that simply because they have a long-term contract entered into in 1997, one and done, the test for whether costs are prudent and commodity-related is forever and forevermore satisfied. If that were the case, if that's all that's required under Section 26, it wouldn't really need to be an approval process with the possibility, as we're all gathered here today, for a hearing. There wouldn't be very much to hear. The Commission's role would be reduced to ensuring that the math was right in the COPA calculation, if the Commission is truly precluded from looking under that hood and saying, time out, this cost doesn't look like a commodity cost. This cost looks like it relates to something utterly unrelated to the provision of wholesale power, which is the essence of the case that we will put on. Now, it's clear the commission or the Precorp doesn't want the commission to dig into this DGC issue. It's clear from the standing objection that you just heard. But that's what precisely what the commission should do and must do to fulfill its charge to ensure that rates are just and reasonable. If the commission doesn't exercise its jurisdiction to review the nature of the costs that Precorp seeks to pass on, then there will be no review of those costs by any regulator. Because if the parties agree on one thing, it's that FERC has no jurisdiction here, hasn't had jurisdiction for some time. Also, according to Precorp, its fundamental position is, we got a bill. We have no alternative but to pay that bill. It's a bill, it says wholesale power bill. We have no alternative but simply pay that bill and pass those charges on to our ratepayers. And further, according to Precorp, ratepayers who are Precorp's members of Precorp, whose interests Precorp should fundamentally and first have in mind, they also have no choice but to just pay the bill. And according to Precorp, there's nothing that Precorp, nor this commission, nor end user customers, including our clients, the joint interveners, can do about this. That can't be right. The logical end of that position is that any costs that Basin chooses could be in that wholesale power rate. And just because those costs are cloaked in the mantle of wholesale power or wholesale power rate, this commission is effectively shut out from any review whatsoever as to what the nature is or is not of those supposed wholesale costs. That is the fundamental essence of the standing objection that you just heard. Precorp's analysis of its contract with Basin is cut from the same cloth. Never mind that it is on the face of it, on page one, it is a wholesale power agreement, not an anything Basin wants to sell us and call wholesale power agreement. Never mind that Precorp has the right to say to Basin under the contract, hey, let's look more closely at these costs. We believe certain of these costs really aren't related to the provision of wholesale power. And that's all we're required to buy from you, and that's all you're entitled to charge us for under the contract.
I'm going to insert an objection that this is summary judgment argument again instead of what the witnesses are going to discuss in the hearing.
Objection overruled.
Precorp would have the commission believe that the only thing Precorp can do is pay the bill. We don't think, and we think the testimony will show, the contract is not that profoundly one-sided. Indeed, we believe that the testimony will show that Basin has the obligation under the contract to bill only those costs related to wholesale power. That's fundamentally what the contract says. Precorp will talk a lot in testimony. You'll hear a lot about the various benefits that it claims DGC has historically provides and will provide the Basin on an ongoing basis. And that was covered at length, particularly in the rebuttal testimony that Precorp's various witnesses filed, particularly the rebuttal testimony from Ms. Sorensen of Basin. For our part, joint interveners are skeptical regarding Basin's quantification of these supposed benefits, and you'll hear that in testimony as well. We believe the commission should be skeptical as to the nature and quantification of these supposed benefits after it hears the evidence. But let's not get lost in the debate over what these benefits are or are not, or what the quantification of these benefits is or isn't. Let's not miss the larger point in that discussion. Passing through Dakota gasification costs, requiring captive end users to provide an equity infusion to shore up DGC's balance sheet, is inappropriate, no matter what past benefits DGC may or may not have provided. Requiring, again, captive end user customers to voluntarily invest in DGC, a non-electric, non-utility enterprise, is not appropriate. That is precisely what the pass-through of these DGC costs to retail ratepayers would accomplish. In essence, compulsory subscription. You are now, whether you want to be or not, an involuntary investor in a coal gasification enterprise. Freeport will also talk, and you heard Ms. Good reference this a lot, and they mentioned this in pre-filed testimony regarding its financial situation and the impact if the commission orders the DGC disallowance that joint interveners have requested. But if this commission determines that the DGC costs are not commodity costs, they are not part of providing wholesale power, why would Precorp be obligated to pay those costs under a wholesale power agreement as part of a wholesale power rate if they're not part of providing wholesale power? You also heard Ms. Good suggest that this is the proverbial Gordian knot. You simply can't untangle the knot or disintegrate the DGC constituent component part from the basin wholesale rate. But it can't be right that if that is indeed a non-power, a non-wholesale power related cost, as we claim it is and as the evidence will show it is, it can't be right that Basin and Precorp can immunize that from review simply by baking it into the wholesale power rate. This commission and this commission alone stands to say whether those costs are related to providing utility service to Wyoming customers. We understand that thinking on potential remedies in this case will be difficult, particularly in light of Precorp's financial situation. We understand that. But that doesn't relieve Precorp from its duties under Wyoming law. And it doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a remedy simply because it may be more challenging than in other situations to think about that remedy. Either the costs satisfy Section 26 for pass on or the costs do not. The fact that addressing that question of remedy may be difficult here doesn't change the fundamental question. Can Precorp pass on any costs it wants simply by saying, we got a wholesale power bill, now customers, members, it's your turn? We respectfully submit that the answer to that question must be no, and we believe that the evidence and the testimony in the case will bear that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roselli. Ms. Good, please call your first witness.
Precorp calls Mike Easley.
Could raise your right hand, please. Do you swear to tell the Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So if you got
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Easley, will you please state your full name for the record?
My name is Michael Edward Easley.
Where are you employed at?
I'm employed at Powder River Energy Corporation in Sundance, Wyoming.
What's your position there?
I'm the Chief Executive Officer.
And how long have you been in that position?
I've been in that position since October of 2000.
Did you file testimony in this matter?
I filed rebuttal testimony.
Have you had a chance to review your pre-filed testimony before appearing here today?
Yes, I have.
Do you have any, well, first I'll draw your attention to the exhibits 2.1 and 2.2 in Precorp's exhibit notebook. I believe you're familiar with those. Are those the two exhibits attached to your pre-filed rebuttal testimony?
Yes.
Are there any corrections to your testimony that you'd like to point out?
No, there's not.
And do you believe that that testimony, or the testimony that you give on direct exam here today under oath would be the same or similar to that in your pre-filed testimony?
Yes, I do.
With that in mind, will you please summarize your direct testimony for the commission?
Yes, I will. Good morning. In summary of my testimony, I'd like to start out with talking about the Precorp all requirements contract with Basin. That contract was executed in 1997, and during the time that contract was executed, Precorp also had a through its predecessor organizations had a history of relationships with all requirements contract, all requirements contracts with the Basin or other G&Ts that were members of Basin. The all requirements contract that we have is a long-term cost-based contract. The contract that we entered upon protects the Precourt members, and history has shown that the all requirements contracts that we execute, while when the markets are at their very lowest, oftentimes those contracts are higher than the low markets, but when the markets are very high, those contracts are below the high. And so over time, the all requirements wholesale power contract that we have is a good contract for our membership. Provides competitive prices and good reliable power supply. When we executed that contract at the time, DGC was in operations at Basin, and DGC was a part of the operations at Basin that we accepted when we executed that contract. At issue this particular proceeding is I don't think is the contract itself, but it's really the cost of power adjustment. And over the years, and beginning when I first came to Precorp, we looked at at that time, actually, our wholesale power costs were getting cheaper because we were in a growth mode. And there was not a COPA mechanism as part of our all requirements contract. And when Precorp system was growing very quickly and a rate was established, what would happen is we could actually generate a margin because we fixed our wholesale price at one, things got cheaper because of either volume or price, and we over-recovered. And
I'm going to interject an objection. I don't find anywhere in Mr. Easley's pre-file testimony this area that he's now attempting to summarize. I think it's the summary is beyond what was pre-filed.
Your objection is noted, but we'll overrule and please proceed.
Okay. So the COPA mechanism is intended to ensure that Precorp just collects its wholesale commodity costs. And we've interpreted those wholesale commodity costs with the support of commission orders and rulings through the COPA proceeding that those are our wholesale commodity costs. And we've presented that. This particular COPA application that we filed is unique. It's not like all the other ones, because with the exception of another COPA filing that was made as a mid-year rate increase. And so, to my recollection, this COPA filing, the mid-year rate increase, is the second time, at least in my history at Precorp, that this has occurred. It occurred once when the Dry Fork Station, I think, was brought online. And it occurred at this time because of issues that Basin was facing from a perspective of financial health. The mid-year rate increase that we are currently talking about in this case was a mid-year rate increase that was approved by the Basin Board of Directors, which is from the perspective of the cooperative model. Basin's board is the regulator. They sit in the seat, they make decisions on the rates. Those board members are elected by through the process by the Basin members. And those members approved the mid-year rate increase, and that was then began charging to us on August 1st. The reason for that increase was in projecting what Basin's end of the year consolidated financial position was going to end up, the ratios and the requirements that Basin had to maintain creditworthiness were at risk of failing certain ratios. And so they implemented the rate increase to make sure that going into the next year and also finishing that year, that Basin's credit rating would not be lowered, potentially impaired by the consolidated operating margin. The membership supported that rate increase because we understand the value of having a financially healthy Basin Electric, and that's a very important thing. The mid-year rate increase from our perspective, represents wholesale commodity costs. And I disagreed in my testimony with Higgins' attempt to break that down into non-commodity related expenses, because we consider our wholesale power bill as commodity costs from Basin Electric. We are required to pay our power bill under the terms of the contract. There's a provision that we can dispute if we want to dispute a portion of the power bill. And in this particular case, we saw no reason to raise a dispute. The DGC has been part of our rate of since we signed our contract with Basin, and inherent within the cost of service study is benefits that arrive from DGC. Those have been calculated to the tune of $90 million in benefits. If you were to look at that benefit to DGC, those benefits that DGC provides us, and even compare those to the joint intervenors discussion on DGC expenses, there's still an overall benefit from DGC in the Basin rate. But more importantly, we see Basin's DGC as a related facility. And from my perspective, DGC does not generate electricity. DGC is basically linked to Basin operations, electric operations, because of the fuel. There's the DGC produces natural gas, which is used, Basin uses natural gas for its gas generation fleet. DGC also, they don't actually produce coal. The coal is mined, but there are certain types of coal fines that DGC cannot use, and those fines are used by the ABS Antelope Valley Station at a reduced cost, and basically saves fuel costs for the ABS station. So we think DGC is related, is definitely a related facility. I certainly understand that DGC does not generate electricity, but it doesn't have to in order to be related. If we had a dispute on the impacts of DGC or any other billing issues that we may have with Basin, we could raise that dispute officially, formally, somehow, but we still have to pay our power bill. Our contract requires that we pay our power bill, and we think that contract is something that is important that we make sure that we keep, because we think all requirements contract with Basin is an asset for Precorp and its membership. Precorp, as I mentioned, we are not objecting to the Basin increase, and primarily it's because we understand the need for Basin to maintain its financial health. That's an important thing for Precorp and all the members of Basin Electric. We have had ongoing discussions with Basin, and I say we, the channels of communication that we have with Basin. I communicate as part of a manager advisory committee, which is a committee where all the Basin member managers, the Class A systems, sit around and they visit with Basin staff on particular issues. I also have served on a rate subcommittee, which takes a little deeper dive into some rate design issues. Through all those discussions, we're continuing, even though we're continuing to ask Basin questions about the 2017 rate, what's going to happen if the Basin margin level, Basin produces margins as much as they projected, will those come back to the members through bill credits? Will those come back to the members through the capital credit mechanism? Is the rate that's been established in 2017, is that appropriate? And all these discussions, as I mentioned in my testimony, there are ongoing discussions that we're having with Basin to make sure that our rate is as low as it possibly can be. I'm very concerned that if the rate, the COPA requests that we've made, if that is not improved, if it's disallowed in whole or in part, I'm concerned on the impact of Precorp. Financial impact, obviously, I think everybody would agree that financial impact of not being able to collect millions of dollars, $1 million a month in power costs would be something that would be very difficult for Precorp to come up with. If the joint interveners, they proposed two different versions of potential remedy. One was to disallow and one was to allow them to opt out. We're also concerned that if we do allow them to opt out of what, you know, an impact related to DGC or a benefit related to DGC, I would assume those two go hand in hand. It creates a slippery slope for what other cases may come before the commission or issues that we have to deal with as other things that were found within the basin operations that someone might argue are not related to the production of electricity. And we're certainly concerned that our ability to react quickly to what we consider wholesale commodity cost changes through the COPA mechanism puts a lot of these discussions into more complicated hearings, which are not only are they costly, but even from a timing perspective, they take a lot of time. And the cycle of annual rate increases that we receive from Basin and our usual timing, that annual increase is probably faster than the commission process from the time of making a filing and the hearing and all that. Those could be very close together, so we're concerned with the impacts of those. I believe that's a summary of my testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions or provide clarifications.
We'll pass the witness for questions from the joint interveners and the commission.
Thank you, Ms. Good. Mr. Hickey, who's across again?
Thank you, Mr. Burbridge. Good morning, Mr. Easley.
Good morning, Mr. Hickey.
Let me try to summarize what I believe your core message is to this commission. Did I get it right, Mr. Easley, that you're saying we needed a mid-year COPA increase because Basin was at risk of being financially unstable and Basin increased its rate to us? And in order to keep Basin financially stable, we agreed to the rate. Is that the core of your testimony, sir?
No, it's not.
Well, did I get it right that the only other time that you've had a mid-year COPA increase, it related to construction cost overruns at the Dry Fork coal-fired generating facility located in Campbell County?
I'm sorry, I missed that last statement.
Isn't it true, Mr. Easley, that you said the only other time in your history with Precorp that Precorp has had a mid-year COPA filing, it related to construction costs overrun at the Dry Fork station?
That's not true. And if I may, I didn't say cost overruns at the Dry Fork station. I said that is when the Dry Fork station came online and construction costs came online. I did not say cost overruns.
Fair enough. I don't want to parse words with you, Mr. Easley. The purpose of the increase was because construction costs were greater than originally anticipated on Dry Fork. Isn't that essence of the COPA filing was?
No.
Well, let's see if we can't move this along, Mr. Easley. You would agree, wouldn't you, sir, that the Dry Fork generating system provides electricity?
It does.
The purpose of that facility is to generate electricity using coal as the source energy for that process, correct?
That's correct.
This case involves an issue of the financial stability of your wholesale supplier, Basin. Isn't that true?
Yes, that's true.
And you've said that you want your captive customers, including my clients, to pay this increase because the financial stability of Basin is in Precorp's interest.
Precorp has an all requirements contract with Basin that requires us to pay Basin's power bill, which represents our commodity costs, and our customers are required to pay rates to Precorp that have been approved by the Public Service Commission.
And in your discussion of the reason for this COPA filing, that being the financial stability of Basin, you said that the Basin Board acts as the regulator. Do you recall making that statement in your summary?
I do.
You wouldn't suggest to this commission that the role that they have in seeing that the public interest is addressed is the same regulatory function that you're, by calling a Basin Board a regulator, any way analogous. Isn't that true?
I think the Basin Board regulates the basin rates. They are provided that authority by a vote of the basin membership who are the owners of the company. The commission has their regulatory role defined by state law. So I think the basis of the regulation is different, but I think it's similar in that the Basin Board sits, sits in front of the basin membership and hears many of the similar things that a commission may hear as far as why costs are what they are and how to go about recovering. The Basin Board makes policy on the rate of return that is recovered. So I think there are some similarities.
Mr. Easley, there's no Supreme Court precedent that governs the actions and the decisions of the Basin Board that says when acting to find the public interest, the Basin Board must put the interests of ratepayers above the interests of the utility, is there?
I have no idea, Mr. Hickey, of any Supreme Court.
Well, my only point in referencing that, Mr. Easley, is the regulatory scheme that this commission operates under to protect the public interest is substantially different than whatever laws of governance through bylaws the Basin Board has when it says, let's increase our rates to ensure our financial stability by causing members of this cooperative structure to pay that increase. Isn't that a fact?
I would agree they're substantially different, yes.
Hey, what percent of Precorp's customer load is represented by the coal industry?
I would say from an energy perspective, that's probably about 65%.
So we're clear. When I'm saying customer load, I'm meaning essentially the sales that Precorp has. So are you telling the commission, and if you're not, correct it, that 65% of your sales of power are directed to members that operate coal facilities within your service territory?
65 to 70%.
So we can agree on this, can't we, Mr. Easley, that the coal industry is incredibly important to the financial success of Precorp?
Absolutely.
How many representatives from currently operating coal companies within Precorp service territory sit on the board of directors of Precorp?
I don't believe there's any.
It's more than believe. You would know, wouldn't you, Mr. Easley? You know who's on your board. That's not something we need to quibble about, is it? Either they are on it or they aren't.
Yeah, there are no employees from any coal companies on the Powder River Energy Board.
Thank you. Has a representative of an operating coal company within Precorp service territory served on the board of directors at any time in this current century?
Maybe.
Right, with that maybe, who is that individual?
Well, at one time, we have a director on our board. His name is Ruben Ritthaler. And Ruben has been a director for many, many years. I can't tell you how long, 30 years or so. There was a time where Ruben was not reelected to become a member on the Precorp board. This had to do with the transition. Complicated the answer here. Had to do with the transition between the merger between Tri-County and the Sheridan Johnson. So the way the the board shrunk essentially during that time. Ruben ended up not being a director, and at that time, Ruben was an employee of the coal mine. The coal mines hired Ruben, and he represented the coal mines at our board meetings. He was not a director. Then when Ruben was reelected back onto the board, I believe that employment relationship ended, but I don't know if it ended before he was on the board or shortly thereafter.
Fair enough. Thank you, Mr. Easley. With that footnote of historical significance, we are in agreement that no one from the coal industry currently sits on your board. Agreed?
That's correct.
In light of the fact that the coal industry represents, according to you, 65% of Precorp's customer load, wouldn't you agree that someone from this industry should serve on the Precorp board?
Well, the co-op principles are basically one member, one vote, and we don't have weighted governance on our board. And our board is selected through a member voting process. So there's nothing that has precluded a coal mine employee from being on the basin board if the person was qualified and met the qualifications, that they would get either appointed by the nominating committee or potentially nominated by petition, which requires 20 signatures. And then the membership would vote. And so all the members that we have are seated by member vote.
Okay. So the question that was asked was not the process. The question that was asked was, would you agree, Mr. Easley, given the significance of the coal industry to the financial viability of Precorp, wouldn't you agree that a member from that industry should be on this board?
I can't agree to that, Mr. Hickey, because you're asking me to basically agree to something that's in conflict with Precorp's bylaws, unless that person was voted on by the membership to be on the board.
Well, acknowledging, sir, that there is a process to get on the board, don't you think, from the perspective of having a board that is reflective of the customers that you serve, an industry that represents 65% of your customer load should have a seat at the table?
That would be a decision that the membership would make, Mr. Hickey, not me.
You wouldn't oppose someone from the coal industry, subject to meeting the conditions of the bylaws, becoming a member of this board, would you, Mr. Easley?
Mr. Hickey, I don't oppose any board members that would want to run for the board for whatever reasons.
So that was a yes?
Yes.
I'm going to direct you to what was received into evidence this morning as Joint Intervenors Exhibit 234.28. And Mr. Burbage had thought that we would have exhibits at the table for
there
witnesses.
There are exhibits at the witness stand there on that top shelf there, Mr. Burbage.
Okay. So if you would look for the notebook that looks just like mine and yellow page, Mr. Easley, that is on the jacket, Joint Intervenors Exhibit. And the very last one is number 28. First of all, can you identify that for us?
Yes. This is a letter dated November 4th, 2016, from Steve St. Clair of Galactic Energy Resources.
And we can agree, can't we? You know Steve St. Clair, don't you?
I do.
And he works for Cloud Peak Energy Resources, isn't that true?
I believe that's correct, yes, sir.
And he expressed an end of directors of Precorp.
He did.
You believe Mr. St. Clair is qualified in the broad sense to serve on the board of directors of Precorp? Does he have the fundamental intelligence and skills and interest and commitment, regardless of where he personally has a meter for his electric service, to serve on that board?
What do you mean by broad?
Well,
I think with the exception, and I would just, I think Mr. St. Clair is very knowledgeable and professional individual. He's indicated over the course of we have customer meetings that we have, depending on the time of the year, depending on what year, the frequency of our customer meetings that I've had with Mr. St. Clair, where I have an opportunity to work for him, have varied from monthly meetings where we met every month to depending on.
I can move us along if you would allow me, Mr. Easley. Mr. St. Clair has a BS in civil engineering from the University of Wyoming, doesn't he?
I don't know that.
Did you look at the second page of Exhibit 28?
No, I didn't.
Would you?
Sure.
The third bullet from the end, doesn't he represent to Precorp that he is degreed with a BS in civil engineering from the University of Wyoming?
Yes, that is.
Has an MBA from the University of Washington, correct?
That's correct.
He's a registered professional engineer in Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, and Oregon, correct?
That's correct.
So can we agree that there's a strong background represented in Mr. St. Clair to bring some skill and understanding to any organization that he would offer his leadership to?
I believe he's well, his qualifications are impressive.
Okay, but Mr. St. Clair wasn't able to sit on the Precorp board or even stand for election to it. Isn't that true?
Mr. St. Clair did not meet the requirements in Precorp's bylaws to be a director.
And let's get into that. That's because he did not personally have a meter within your service territory. Is that why he was rejected?
I don't believe he met the requirements of the bylaws as it relates to that requirement, yes. But I would have to look at the bylaws in order to be clear on that.
Well, let's be clear on this. Cloud Peak sure has meters within your service territory, doesn't it?
They do.
Cloud Peak is one of the largest purchasers of electrical services from Precorp, isn't it?
Yes, they are.
Why wouldn't it be acceptable with Mr. St. Clair's employer having such a substantial metering presence within the service territory for him to represent his employer?
Because he does
on
not,
that board.
According to the language that's in the bylaws, he's not qualified.
One final question on this, Mr. Easley, and then we can move on. If Mr. St. Clair were to look in the Gillette newspaper and find a rental property somewhere within Precorp's service territory and rent that house, whether or not he actually lived in it but took service in this hypothetical rental, would he then be qualified to sit on your board?
If I could look at the bylaws, I could answer that question.
Without the bylaws, you don't know.
Without the bylaws, I'm not comfortable answering your question.
I think
Mr.
your
Hickey.
Counsel listed as a new exhibit this morning those bylaws. I don't see a need to go into it at this point. If your counsel wants to, I'm sure she will. Let me visit with you for a minute about exhibit 234.25, Mr. Easley. You'll find it in that same notebook. We can agree that you're looking at Exhibit 25 when you have it in front of you. That this is, in fact, the July 21, 1997 wholesale power contract that you talked about in your summary, isn't it?
Objection. I think we need to clarify the date. Mr. Hickey, you said the July.
Okay, excuse me. Thank you for the correction. The January 21st, 1997 wholesale power contract.
Yes, it is.
Directing you to page 3 of that agreement, you see after the conclusion of the whereas clauses that began on page 1, there's a paragraph numbered 1, and it's introduced as the general paragraph. Do you see that?
Yes, sir.
Would you read the first sentence of the general paragraph?
Seller shall sell and deliver to the member, and the member shall purchase and receive from the seller the total electric power requirements of the member to the extent that the seller has the power available.
So we can agree, can't we, Mr. Easley, that this provision of the contract requires Precorp to purchase all of its electrical power requirements from Basin so long as Basin has power available, correct?
That is correct.
But Precorp is not obligated under this contract to purchase anything that Basin may choose to call power and energy. Isn't that true?
Precorp is required under this contract to pay the Basin Class A rate.
Well, we can agree that the contract is called a wholesale power agreement. That's what they're talking about selling to Precorp is power, correct?
The contract definitely says wholesale power contract.
And it requires Precorp to buy electric power, not underwrite the financials of an unregulated, non-electric subsidiary. Isn't that true?
Mr. Hickey, I think you're trying to put words into my mouth, but the contract goes further to require Precorp to pay the Basin Class A member rate. Which is what we have requested the commission the authority to recover in our COPA filing.
Well, you were here last week for the arguments on summary judgment, weren't you, Mr. Easley?
Yes, I was.
And you heard examples that were used in over the course of argument in that hearing, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And you would agree, Mr. Easley, that if Basin attempted to put the cost of a minor league baseball franchise into its baked wholesale power rate to Class A or B or C customers, folks wouldn't have to pay for the cost of a failing hypothetical minor league baseball franchise. Isn't that true?
Well, I don't think that would ever find its way into the Basin rates to begin with.
Well, let's hope not. And it wouldn't find its way in there because it's not power, right? And it's not energy, right?
I think it would find its way in there because the board would not approve that.
Well, you would agree. I mean, you can't speak for that board, correct, Mr. Easley?
That's true.
But you can speak on behalf of your understanding of this agreement from the perspective of Precorp, correct?
I can.
And from that perspective, you would agree that the cost of a failed minor league franchise should not be included within the cost billed to customers under this wholesale power contract. Agreed?
Yeah, I don't believe that that would be related to Basin's power supply.
Okay. Do you agree, Mr. Easley, that it's important that there be a review of the items for which cost recovery is sought by Basin under this contract, Exhibit Joint Interveners 234.25?
Do I believe a review? I lost your train of thought.
Yeah, I think it's an important thought. Let me try to state it again, maybe more slowly. Do you agree, Mr. Easley, that it is important that there be a review of the costs that Basin seeks to recover under its billings to Precorp pursuant to the January 1997 wholesale power agreement?
I believe that's important, and I believe that has been accomplished.
Well, you filed an application with this commission under Chapter 3, Section 26 of its rules, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
And the purpose of this docket is to allow a detailed review of the wholesale power costs that you have told Basin you'll pay and that you now want your captive customers to pay. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I think our request is to request approval of our commodity costs, which we consider the cost derived by the Basin Class A rate, which is addressed in this contract.
And you would agree that this commission should exercise its full authority and jurisdiction to determine whether or not the costs for which recovery is sought were prudently incurred, agreed?
I think so, yes.
And that they should also recognize, they should also exercise their jurisdiction to determine that these are in fact commodity costs pursuant to Chapter 3, Section 26 of this commission's rules. Isn't that also a fact?
I believe the commission, we've asked the commission to review our COPA mechanism, which we use to recover our wholesale power costs, which are the Class A, which is the Class A rate for Basin Electric. I think from a prudency perspective, when we entered this contract, that was a prudent thing for us to do. I think there are some very complicated legal questions that I certainly don't have the expertise to answer the legal questions, but I do have the knowledge and expertise to know that they're very fundamentally good questions on what part of that the commission has jurisdiction over. We have asked commission to approve our COPA based upon our wholesale power contract and the Class A rates as billed to us by Basin Electric.
The issue, Mr. Easley, I'm not going to.
Mr. Hickey, with that, why don't we go ahead and take a break for 15 minutes, and we'll readjourn at 10:15.